Good afternoon. I recognise that I'm the last stop between the bar, casino, golf course or swimming pool, depending on what your persuasion is. So I'm going to give you a whistle-stop tour of the progress on the DTV ATP project. And hopefully we'll have time for some questions, but if not, I'll definitely be around at tonight's dinner. So I think you've heard quite a lot today about or references to DTV ATP. And I want to talk about what we've been doing over the last couple of months. The session objectives here are to provide an update on the progress of the project and where it fits into the life cycle overall, deliver information on the progress made to date, and just reiterate the problem statement, why we're actually thinking about doing this project. So the agenda, I'm going to give you a bit of a project overview, talk about the solution scope and how we got there, talk about some of the challenges we have with an implementation approach, and then finally wrap up. So the imperative for DTV ATP, there's been a lot of issues raised over the past couple of years, I think stretching back maybe 5 years, on the end-to-end acquisition-to-air process. The current environment, as you see here, some of the challenges we have, separate non-integrated databases, manual scheduling using spreadsheets, which happen in both the PBS and across the system, no integration with member station solutions, people rekeying things from pods or from PBS Express, and numerous contacts for producers for similar information. So they're providing PBS with the same information in multiple different formats. Going forward, we'd like to see a unified database. We'd like to see automated support for schedule development. We'd like to provide integration between the PBS systems and the member station trafficking solutions. And then we'd like to give direct access to programmers into this central repository. So clearly some tall orders there. So what have we been doing? As most people know, there are four phases. I mean, they go under different names, but typically, you know, you start with a conceptual design or a validation phase, move into design, you build it, and then you get it out there. We're currently in the validation stage, and we set out to validate the solution requirements. 2 years ago, there was a project, I think it was known as TLA back then, that had defined some very high-level requirements. We wanted to validate those requirements, and we also wanted to validate the issues that were raised by some of the member stations during some site visits. We wanted to see if there were any process change opportunities. Obviously, when you put a new system in, you don't just put in a technology solution, you also change the processes and the way business is done. From an implementation perspective, we wanted to look at not only the original proposed custom build, but whether there were alternatives out there in terms of vendor solutions that could help us to implement the majority of the requirements. And then we wanted to update the original business case to see if it still made sense and develop a go-forward project plan if this was the right time. And then we would follow through with the remaining phases. Basically, that meant that during this validation period, we had 6 months, and we've done all of these activities, and I know you probably can't see them at the back, and these materials are available after the conference if you would like to peruse them at your leisure. But basically, we wanted to go out there and actually talk to member stations and find out the issues that were raised 2 years ago. Do they still exist, and are there new issues? We actually conducted 5 different site visits with PPTN, WHRO, KOPB, IPTV, WGBH, and we also went to APT, a non-PBS distributor. And we got a wealth of information from those site visits. At the same time, we wanted to develop the solution requirements based on our findings and actually start a software selection process to see if there was a vendor out there that had a product in the marketplace that would be suitable. We followed up all of the findings from our visits with 3 regional focus groups, which were held to see if we were actually on the right track and if the solution that we were actually proposing would meet the requirements. We did those recently at KCET in LA, WTTW in Chicago, and WETA in Washington, and we had representation from 21 member stations and 3 non-PBS distributors. So I'm sure you can see we've done a tremendous amount of work over the last 6 months to validate whether DTV ATP as a solution makes sense. But we didn't do this without some serious guidance from executive steering committee members. Their main role was to ensure that we're on the right track, to provide input from the PTV perspective, and finally to approve whatever recommendations we come forward with and advocate that funding be placed towards this project should that be the case. I'm sure you can read, as well as I can, all of the people that are on here, but there's representation from senior level executives from a number of the member stations, as well as from within PBS. The work was actually done by a combination of PBS core team members and Accenture. As you can imagine, this has not been a very easy task to do the amount of work in 6 months, and we've had tremendous input from the PBS core team, many of which are here today, and they represent key functional or business areas from within PBS, and then there's the Accenture core team, which came with the subject matter expertise from an implementation and broadcast perspective. So that's pretty much just an outline of the project in terms of, you know, what we've done and where we are in from a phase perspective, and who's actually been involved. I'm just going to walk briefly through the solution scope and what we did to define the scope, and at a very high level what it looks like. So as I mentioned, we conducted a number of site visits and internal interviews with PBS departments, the five member stations, APT, the 16 PBS departments, and then we also visited the PBS sponsorship group in New York. What we took with to these site visits were the original requirements that were defined a couple of years ago, and a whole slew of issues that were raised by member stations during the original site visits. And we just, as I said before, wanted to check, you know, are these still the issues, and have we validated they still exist, or have they gone away and been replaced with new issues? We did get tomes and tomes of information out of that, and the key findings and observations were then put as input into the solution scope. Well, we wanted to make sure that we didn't work in a vacuum here, so we also conducted a survey of best practices in the broadcasting industry to make sure that we understood what everybody else was doing and why, and if we were thinking of doing something different, was it because of the unique requirements for public television, or did it, you know, make sense that we were being different from the commercial broadcasters? So we also put that into the mix with our key findings and observations, and then basically sort of mixed it all together and came out with a whole heap of new recommendations, and I think at the last count there's about 128 solution requirements. We took those out in the form of high-level capabilities and did a little bit of a roadshow with the three regional focus groups to test our ideas and our thoughts with people out in the field to understand, are we on the right track, and gather some more information. And then that finally meant we defined the solution scope. So out of all of these sort of sessions that we had, you know, there were fundamental challenges that we confirmed during this phase. More than once, we've heard about the non-timely delivery of inaccurate, poor quality data that comes from PBS. We've heard that there is a need for multi-channel support. Digital transition is happening, and we need to be able to support it when it finally is reality across every station. The current systems at PBS are not extendable in terms of a long-term view. So, you know, in terms of a 10 to 15-year lifespan of a solution, the systems are not going to last another 15 years. There's a lack of standard workflow that happens throughout the organisation. Many of the information transfer is done very informally and through just methods of communication which can break down. And there's also a lot of manual re-entry going on, which obviously is prone to error. Producers are very, very frustrated with the process. Again, they have to deal with multiple faceless individuals from their perspective providing the same information time and time again, when they could really get away with just providing it once and then be transparent to how PBS needs to communicate that information through the organisation. Underwriting is becoming increasingly complex. When the original systems were developed, underwriting was, you know, the rights of the programme was 3 years, your underwriting was 3 years, and it was the same underwriter. Today, underwriters are looking for much more flexible models of underwriting programmes, and the current systems are stretched. There's a lot of manual tracking required, specifically of ancillary revenue, music rights, and producer payments. Again, there's no automated way to do any of this today. And there's no automated way to guarantee that the rights usage is being audited effectively at the front end, and also making sure that stations don't broadcast outside of rights periods. So we heard a lot of reoccurring themes. My favourite, and I'm not sure if the individuals are here today, but my favourite saying throughout this whole thing was that being a member station is like being the hunter-gatherer of the new millennium in terms of where you need to go for the information. And dealing with PBS is like navigating through the black hole. So I thought I'd bring that up because, you know, it really is true to form in terms of what people need to do their jobs. There's a lot of duplication of effort. You know, people are saying, I have to rekey this in, I have to do this, I have to call this person. There's no ad hoc reporting. If you need a report done at PBS to get something, some information, the information is not available in one integrated place, so the report can't be produced without a significant amount of effort. The data is inaccurate and not timely when it gets to member stations, and again, producers are very frustrated by the process. So I really know that this is, you're not going to be able to read this slide, and there's an intent here just to sort of shock people. Many people here probably do not have visibility into the current systems at PBS, and this is what needs to happen in order to produce pods, basically. In order to give information out to the member stations, there's a myriad of systems that are all connected through manual processes. I think the key takeaway from this slide really is to look at the number of dotted lines between these boxes. Each one of these dotted lines represents a manual process. And so there's an enormous amount of sneaker net going on, basically, where people are running data from one system to the next, which is clearly prone to error and can lead to inaccuracies in the data. So I think the title speaks for itself. You know, the current system is broken in terms of not necessarily today, but going forward in looking in the long-term view, it's going to be very difficult to extend these systems over a 10 to 15-year period, which is clearly what you need to be looking at. So we're faced with a real tall order because you've seen the complexity of the current systems today. And also, these aren't just systems which are back-office systems. These are mission-critical systems to the acquisition to air process. You know, without these systems, it's very difficult to get those programs on air. So when you start talking about replacing these systems, you know that you're in for a mammoth task. So the DTV ATP target solution is intending to provide an integrated database. It wants to ensure the seamless content flow, basically from producers through PBS to member stations. It shouldn't be obvious who's touched that data. It should be transparent and the data should flow very, very well. We want to make sure we can cater to a complex underwriting world. As the model moves more and more towards commercial models where they are trying to do smaller and smaller increments of underwriting programs, not to add the airtime sales, but more just to the timing of where they want to underwrite those programs, is getting more complex, and we want to be able to cater to that. We want to provide flexible access to information by stations. Stations should be able to go in and get visibility into the central systems held, the data centrally held by PBS in this integrated form, and search on it and basically pull that data as they need to. We want to set some common standards for data interchange. I know a lot of people have heard about XML, and you know we're intending to use XML as the protocol to exchange data across the system. Overall, all of these things should improve data quality. We remove the manual intervention, and we basically tighten the processes in terms of when the data gets entered into the system, and so we can overall improve the data quality. And we're going to provide ubiquitous access to this through web-enabled technology. So this picture is what I refer to as the clean picture as opposed to the ugly picture. As you can see, the dotted lines have been removed. The next generation traffic and programming system replaces a vast number of the systems currently in operation today. And we've introduced some new components in terms of portal access by member stations, producers, and non-PBS distributors. So the solution itself, DTV ATP, provides capabilities in 8 key areas: program acquisition, program scheduling, manage underwriting, media management and technical services, trafficking and broadcast ops, and then the 3 technical ones: architecture, interfaces and portals, and security. And again, no one's probably going to be able to read this, including me down on the monitor, but I'll briefly go through what each of these are going to provide to you. I'm sure you'll be able to peruse them when you see the printed materials. So then program acquisition, it's a single data repository. Program information is going to be held centrally. It's going to be held in a standardized format, and that's program information and metadata. It's going to be available on demand, and overall it's going to improve efficiencies because there's going to be no rekeying. Member stations are going to have direct, interactive, controlled access to this data, and they're going to be able to get it more timely, and it's going to be more accurate. From a program scheduling perspective, we're going to have an information-level playing field, and by that I mean currently member stations have to go to numerous different places to get access to PBS program information and non-PBS distributor program information. We're proposing that this central data repository will hold information on programs from all distributors regardless. And so we're going to have the information level playing field. We're going to have flexible, easy access, which can, we can search, and it's going to be in a standardized format. Multi-channel and automated time zone scheduling. Alerts and warnings based on business rules. One of the things that makes it very difficult today is there's such a huge volume of information. It's very hard for people to know what information's changed and do I really care about the fact that it's changed. And clearly over time, as you get closer and closer to air, your desires to care about the information is going to change also. So we want to be able to have alerts and warnings which are set by predefined business rules, which can be configurable and then can alert people as required. And then we're going to allow PBS, non-PBS distributors, remote access scheduling, so their schedules can get access to the into the central repository. And we're not going to replace their current trafficking solutions or trafficking mechanism, but we're basically going to be able to take that data in to this system. So again, for the member stations, alerts and warnings are going to be a huge benefit. Uniform access to all schedule information is going to, you know, reduce this hunter-gatherer mentality that people have today. It's going to be user-friendly, easily searched in a standard format. And then we're just going to increase the information delivery speed so that people get information when they need it in the format they need. For managed underwriting, the biggest requirement here from a capability standpoint is the single data repository for national underwriting contracts. So all the national underwriting contracts will be held centrally. Again, in a standard format, and we'll have the ability to track unsold avails. From a member station impact, there's going to be, again, the single data repository, having access to all that information in the same place. And, you know, it's like beating on the same drum. It's just fundamentally important to the success of being able to do people's jobs is to be able to get that information from one place and know that if you're looking at the information, it's the right information. And there are time-coded information for the underwriting credits as being raised as being something that the stations want so that they can be able to understand when the credits come in so they can squeeze it and put their local underwriting in. Media management technical services, basically going to support media and space management to track the physical location status of the materials and be able to understand the missing media and where it is. The member station impact here is pretty limited. I mean, we're going to be able to improve notification to producers and member stations of where the tapes are and the fact that they are missing, but most of the benefit here is held at PBS. Within trafficking and broadcast operations, management of satellite inventory, generation of logs into multiple printable formats, being able to automate the export of the information, of the schedule information, and again, alerts and warnings. Member station impact is being able to interactively view all the satellite schedules and generate the traffic logs in whatever format they need it to be generated in and make refeed requests online. From the technical perspective, I mean, from within the architecture area, we want to consolidate platforms. I mean, as you can imagine, each one of those systems is sitting technically on a different platform, which is just the overall complexity from an operational perspective is higher than it should be if you have a consolidation of these platforms. So we're going to reduce the risk associated with support, and that's really the risk on key personnel, given the fact that, you know, some people have been supporting these systems for a long time, and if they get run over by a bus, as we would say in England, then life's going to look a little sticky for a while. We're going to provide a fault-resilient, stable architecture. I mean, this system needs to be highly available. It needs to be a 24/7, 365 operation. And it needs to be fault-resilient in order that it fails over appropriately within the right service level agreement timeframe. From a member station impact, that basically means that we're going to be able to provide ubiquitous access to the information through web technology. The interfaces and the portals, I mean, the big thing here is they're going to be XML-based, and we're going to be able to automate the system-to-system interfaces for the current solutions that people have there, the Myers and the Scout, as well as being able to provide an XML-based generic format so that people can specify what they would like their interface file to consist of and actually maybe use that and import it into other systems outside of the direct member station trafficking solutions that are there. We're going to be able to have an ingestion, which sounds like something you need a medication for, but an ingestion capability to be able to bring in via XML anything that people want to send us, basically. And eliminate manual re-entry. I mean, if we can make sure that we can seamlessly move the data around through these interfaces by using XML as a protocol, then we should be able to eliminate the manual re-entry. Big thing for the station here is the on-demand information availability. You have a portal, you can pull that information, search it, and just get access to it when you need it. From a security perspective, the capability here is the single sign-on. We're going to use PBS Connect, and I'm not sure how many people are aware of what PBS Connect is, but basically we're going to use the Active Directory component of that to be able to have a single sign-on capability. So once you sign on to PBS Connect, you basically, if you're allowed to use this system, you're basically going to be transparently logged in to the DTV ATP solution. And basically, member stations, that's controlled access. We're going to make sure that people who need access get access based on roles and user profiles. So DTV ATP, I mean, that is really the high-level whistle-stop tour. I mean, there's much, much more information should anybody want to get it in terms of the detailed requirements and some additional information. But that gives you a high-level view of what this solution will and will not encompass. So how does it fit into the wider picture in terms of the initiatives going on in public television? Well, DTV ATP has three roles it can play. One is to fix today. As you can imagine, the systems today need to be shored up or replaced, as we're indicating here, in order to be able to provide reliability, accurate quality, and timely data, and just be a foundational element for the current business operations. They will also provide support for or enable a digital transition. And that's by providing new services support and just being able to scale as the information increases, as the multi-channel becomes more of a reality across the system. And then overall, it's going to support the future transformation of public television. You can see here how it fits in into things that you've also heard about over the past few days, interconnection, ADI, digital asset management, and just the digital transition in general, by being able to house the information that some of these systems are going to need in order to operate. So from an implementation approach, I mean, we have the scope. We spent a lot of time talking with the member stations and really making sure that we'd hit the nail on the head in terms of what are the core capabilities this system needs to provide so that it's beneficial to everybody in public television, not just for PBS. So the next thing that we really need to look at is then, well, how do we go about doing this and really come up with an implementation approach? So from a conceptual architecture standpoint, you know, what we're trying to, the picture that you saw, the nice picture, if you like, with all of the straight lines, conceptually, the way that we'd like to think about this is, you know, providing access from web browsers through the internet, through PBS Connect to authenticate into the DTV ATP solution, whether that be a custom build solution or a package solution, and then basically use XSL to transform the XML to HTML and present that for the web browsers to be able to view it. We'd also, from a client application, the people at PBS would be able to access it from the client, again, authenticated through PBS Connect, and then they would receive the information on the back channel through direct client communication. We'd also want to be able to transfer information down to member station systems through XML transfer via ICE, which is the Information Content Exchange Protocol, which delivers guaranteed delivery of those files down to member station solutions. And we've been working with the two key or mainly used vendors out there today, Myers and Scout, to make sure that when we make this transfer, if you like, that they'll be seamless and their systems will be able to handle it and upgrades to their systems will take place as necessary. And then from a report generation standpoint, we'll use XML to PDF to actually generate reports out of the system. So, as I said, you know, once we've got this conceptual architecture view and we've got the scope for the solution, we have to work out, you know, what can we do to implement this in the best way. Well, there's two options as on the table. One is a custom build, and the other one is use a package and customize that as necessary. So we looked at, you know, there's no silver bullet here, there's no easy option. Anytime you go into a custom build, there are some pros and there are some cons associated with them. And then the package solution doesn't provide, you know, an easier road unless we can find something which allows us to take the vanilla install and basically just, you know, bang out a few interfaces and then call it a day. Fully custom build, I mean, what you get with fully custom and build, well, you know, the world's your oyster. Complete flexibility and coverage requirements. Anything you want to do, you can do. You don't rely on the capabilities provided by external application software vendors. It's supported in-house, so, you know, you basically phone up, phone a friend and get the support you need. And you own the source code, which is in times of change when you're really wanting to make sure that your solution can be enhanced when you come, you hit some new requirements. Owning the source code is obviously comforting. Well, what do you have to do this? Well, you know, you need an enormous amount of internal commitment from a resource perspective. It normally takes quite some time to take something which is a blank sheet of paper and then produce a system of this magnitude, which is mission critical. Basically, you know, if you're going to extend the time frame, then people add new I wants to the list and, you know, you feel like you're in a perpetual build situation. So scope creep can be an issue unless it's carefully managed. And the one-time cost is high. You know, these things don't come cheap, but if you're building them from scratch, they certainly don't come cheap. So then you think, okay, we'll do package. Well, you know, they again, and a long list as well of the pros and cons. I mean, clearly pros, it should be marginally cheaper than a custom build, depending on how many customizations you have to put into a package. Reduced implementation timeframe. I mean, one is expecting that you can at least get, you know, a good proportion of requirements met out of the box, and so you should actually be able to reduce the overall implementation time frame. I mean, these vendors, you know, it's their business. They're expecting to provide the leading edge functionality with the future R&D is in the vendor's best interest, and often they provide those enhancements just as part of the normal maintenance fee, so you get the upgrades for free or for no more than you're normally paying. You're not reliant on maintaining in-house development resources. I mean, if technology is not your business, then, you know, that's a good thing, because you basically don't have to rely on having a huge staff of programmers that can actually keep this machine moving. And it reduces the number of dedicated human capital resources that you need to invest into the project, because you're actually relying on a vendor to be able to provide the skills from an implementation perspective. Well, from a cons perspective, or trade-offs that you need to be aware of, you know, support. I mean, the vendors that we've looked at, and majority of them are at NAB today, the vendors that have made our top shortlist are not based in the US. And so if you're faced with a non-US vendor that's basically several time zones away, then support may be an issue. The source code ownership, there's no vendor that I know is going to pony up their source code for you. And they basically, they're going to own it. You probably won't get an awful lot, if any, of their source code. And that's, you know, every time you need customizations, you have to go back to the well. And it requires compromises to be made in how the requirements are met, because every single requirement has a dollar figure associated with it when you want to make a change. And the other thing about the package solution that we say is package solution with customizations, based on our analysis that we've done over several months and to a reasonable level of detail, you know, we're looking at maybe 60% of the requirements that can be met by an out-of-the-box solution, which means that you're looking to custom build 40% of those requirements anyway. So there was definitely challenges, and there's still challenges out there about what the implementation approach should be. Oh, from a custom build perspective, you know, there really wasn't an awful lot more to think about in the sense of, you know, you just cost it and, you know what the requirements are and you work out how much it's going to cost. Obviously, from a vendor selection perspective, you need to do a little bit more homework to see who can meet the requirements. And so we embarked on a software selection process. And basically the process we went through is we did a survey globally and we came up with 10 candidates. We issued an RFI. We took the responses in, scored them, eliminated five, invited those five to working sessions, rigorously went through a day in the life of a acquisition to air program, and then eliminated a further two candidates. Majority of the eliminations at this stage, from five to three, it was really down to the fact that they required just more customizations than the three remaining candidates. We generated an RFQ. We distributed the RFQ to those three vendors. We then invited those three vendors. We wanted to help them craft their RFQ response. So we invited them to participate in a high-level gap analysis where we could understand, you know, as I'm saying, we got the maximum vendor we got, met 60% of the requirements. So we wanted to allow them the opportunity to understand how they would go about meeting the shortfall in their product, and obviously then providing, you know, a reasonably realistic set of costs. Taking the RFQ responses and then have a, we came up with a preferred vendor. So the 10 products that we started with, some of which you may know, others you probably aren't familiar with. Encoder is the basically Columbine and Enterprise Systems merger. That's the new company, Encoder Systems. Lysis, US, PLAT Media, UK, Syntec Media, Israel, Mediagenics, Belgium, PCI, France, Myers, US, Scout, US, Suna, US, and MSA Focus, US. So these are the 10 that we distributed the RFI to. RFI criteria, as in any RFI criteria, you know, there's a lot of different things, but you're just trying to check who is actually stable, who's got good experience, and if they offer good support and they've got a good install base. So they're the five that, I'm just going to whiz through this a little quickly. The five that remained were Encoder, Myers, PLAT, Syntec, Mediagenics. After the working sessions, we were left with Encoder, PLAT Media, and Mediagenics. And these three, effectively, there's just some notable facts here, but, you know, Encoder's a pretty large company. They have, however, the product that we were looking at is actually a UK-based product. It was taken into their stable in 1997. And they have US support, but they don't develop the product out of the US. Mediagenics started off life as OO Partners, and that was in 1992. And they have notable public service broadcasting clients. They work a lot in the PTV arena within Europe, and they don't support or develop the product in the US. And then PLAT Media, again, was a long-standing company from PLAT Technologies, but again, no real clients in the US and don't support the US from a development or a support location. So basically, we got to the end and we left with a situation where we're going to make our final recommendation to the steering committee today. But, you know, we haven't found a silver bullet here. You know, we've got vendors which only meet maximum 60% of the requirements. And so we're still left with what could be considered to be a high-risk project. So just in wrapping up, you know, the purpose of this validation phase was to validate the original scope issues and assumptions from a couple of years ago, develop the solution scope, revise the costs and the benefits associated with this scope, and then try and select a qualified vendor. The final task for this phase is to take this recommendation that we've come up with and deliver it today at 4 o'clock to the Executive Steering Committee. And then we will be producing a final report, and that will be available to CPB, who are the funders of this phase, and any interested parties at the end of April. Thank you.